glitch up there, so that's fine. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the workshop Fulfilling the Mandate of the IGF. I'm Bill Drake from the Graduate Institute for International Studies. Thank you for coming at such an early hour and trying to wake up with us here. This event is organized by the Internet Governance Caucus, the civil society coalition that has participated since the beginning of 2003 in the WSIS and IGF processes. It's a broad coalition of civil society actors. It is also co-sponsored by the Government of Jamaica and Global Telecenter Alliance, and we very much appreciate their support. The purpose of this event, I think, is to reflect on the IGF's mandate in light of 2 years of experience. We're about to project the mandate onto the screen as soon as that happens, but you will recall that the Tunis Agenda for the Information Society that was agreed at the end of WSIS Article 72, laid out a multi-point list of functions that the Internet Governance might perform, or should perform. These included a number of interesting items that were the result of a long genesis of thought and debate within the various Internet Governance collaborations that have been taking place, both the UN ICT Task Force, the Civil Society Caucus, amongst governments, amongst private sector actors, et cetera, and then later the WGIG, the UN Working Group on Internet Governance, which put forward some initial concrete ideas, and those were taken into the Tunis Agenda and added to, modified, et cetera. And we ended up with this list of items, which you see there. If they could scroll down a little bit so that A was at the top of the screen, that would be good. I don't know how to say that in Portuguese. Am I able to scroll with this? Ah, wow, look at that. Magic, okay. Could you want to try and figure this out while I'm speaking, please? Thank you. well, because I've got it on to B now. In any event, amongst the mandate items were such things as discussing public policy issues related to elements of internet governance to foster sustainability, robustness, and security, et cetera, and development. An important concern, facilitating discourse between bodies dealing with different cross-cutting international policy issues, interfacing with appropriate intergovernmental organizations on matters under their purview, facilitating exchange and best practices, etc. Number of different interesting items were built into the agenda. One that is close to my heart in particular, promote and assess on an ongoing basis the embodiment of the WSIS principles in internet governance processes. But since the WSIS agreement was concluded, there hasn't really been any systematic consideration of which of these functions might actually be performing or the extent to which we are performing them. What do they actually mean in practice? How can we carry them forward? How can we, as somebody suggested the other day, animate them more effectively? It's not unusual, obviously, for an international agreement to elicit little explicit follow-up and debate and action. That happens in a number of occasions. But the WSIS wasn't really all that usual as events go. It was a very complex dialogue that took over 3 years that involved the search for consensus on a host of difficult issues related to internet governance and other matters with unprecedented multi-stakeholder participation. And in the process, expectations were raised, particularly on the part of civil society advocates who had played an important part in shaping some of these ideas, as well as developing countries and others, that the fruits of our collective labor and the principal lines of action involved would be carried forward in a concrete sort of manner, because the view was the performance of those functions would fill important gaps in the global internet governance policy architecture. There's some sense, I think, in some of these communities, and especially among some of us in civil society, and this has been expressed in the various open consultations and online dialogues that have happened over the past couple of years, that perhaps more could be done to animate these functions that are listed in the Tunis Agenda, and that we should explore together in an open public manner exactly how that might be done. Clearly, some of the functions are being performed by the IGF now. There's no question about that. But it could also be argued that there are other items in the list that are more difficult to promote solely through annual conferences comprising main sessions with panels of speakers and assortment of workshops. Just to note the one example that I mentioned before, promote and assess on an ongoing basis the embodiment of the WSIS principles in internet governance processes would seem to imply the institutional capacity to do ongoing monitoring and analysis across multiple internet governance mechanisms. Well, it's very clear that we can't really do that very effectively in the current configuration, or that we aren't doing it. We haven't had any systematic discussion in the IGF process of how transparency, multi-stakeholderism, democratic decision-making, and so on are being reflected in all the various internet governance processes that are out there. And of course, there are many in both the intergovernmental, private sector, and multi-stakeholder environments. So in lack of, the absence of other opportunities to think these things through in a sort of collective way, this workshop seeks to promote an open, constructive, and highly interactive multi-stakeholder exchange of ideas on three points with regard to the mandate. The first is the thinking behind the formulation of the mandate, which derives from the WCAG report and other inputs which I mentioned. Why did we include these provisions? What was the idea? What were we trying to get at? A second point, whether some or all of these functions enumerated in the mandate remain important, value-adding activities that are not being performed elsewhere that would benefit the global community and that are uniquely suited to the Internet Governance Forum. And thirdly, operationally practical steps that could be pursued on a consensual multi-stakeholder basis by the IGF community in order to perform those functions. In other words, if we identify some things that perhaps aren't being carried forward very much today, how might we carry them forward in a way that everybody could find easy agreement on, given the constraints that we face in a number of different dimensions? What might we be able to do together to fill any gaps people feel are there and important? I should say also there's a sort of secondary objective to this event, which is to provide an opportunity to exchange ideas about the current direction and future evolution of the IGF more broadly in light of the mandate. We don't need to replicate all the sorts of discussions already taking place in the open consultations and the advisory group, but we've now done two forums, and on this last day, it seems like an opportune moment to reflect a little bit on what's been accomplished and worked well, and what some other opportunities for improvement might be going forward to Delhi. So we have a very multi-stakeholder panel of speakers assembled to address these questions, and let me just introduce them briefly. The first speaker will be Everton Lucero. Everton holds the position of head of the Science and Technology Division of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the Government of Brazil. He's responsible, among other things, for coordinating governmental positions on issues related to the information society. Previously, he was a chief international advisor for the Ministry of Science and Technology. He's a career diplomat who served in the Brazilian embassies in Singapore and Vienna, and been very involved in a wide variety of aspects of international ICT policy making. He is also, I believe, in the advisory group, right? To the co-chair, special advisor to the co-chair. Okay. Second speaker will be Matthew Shears. Until recently, Matthew was the director for public policy at the Internet Society. He remains an important member of the Internet Society planning team around policy issues. He has extensive experience in public policy, advocacy, communications, business development, and strategy in both the public and private sectors. I will not go through all of his many background details, but he's been involved in both industry and government discussions. Thirdly, Aisha Hassan. She manages the International Chamber of Commerce's Commission on E-Business, IT, and Telecoms. She's also in charge of the ICC's initiative, Business Action to Support the Information Society, BASIS. She managed the Coordinating Committee of Business Interlocutors in the WISIS process, and was involved in the Task Force on Financial Mechanisms, was a member of the WCAG, has participated in the G8 Dot Force, UN ICT Task Force, and many other international institutions involved in ICT policy making. Next, we will have Nicholas Thorne. We're very pleased to have him with us today. He's the United Kingdom's ambassador and permanent representative to the United Nations in Geneva. He served in Geneva since November 2003. Before that, he had served in the UK mission to the UN in New York, and also has wide experience in the Foreign Service and the United Nations environments. Then we will have Karen Banks. No, we won't have Karen Banks, that's right, because Karen Banks decided to shapeshift and become Willie Curry, for whom I don't have a bio. So Karen's sitting in the front row, and Willie Curry from the Association for Progressive Communications will be our next speaker, and I don't really have anything to say about you, Willie. What are you, the APC's policy manager, the policy manager of the Association for Progressive Communication, which, as you all know, is a leading NGO network in this space. Finally, we'll have Parminder Singh. Parminder is the Executive Director of IT for Change in Bangalore. It's an NGO that's been very active in a lot of these issues. He's also the co-coordinator of the Internet Governance Caucus, which is the lead organizer of this event today, and has extensive experience in ICT policymaking matters. So we'll proceed as follows. We'll start with some opening statements vis-a-vis the mandate, the elements of the mandate, and have a bit of interaction among the panelists after those brief opening statements. And then we'll solicit some brief thoughts on the current state of play and options going forward, and we'll open it to the floor. So we're looking forward, despite the early hour, to a very dynamic and interactive discussion, and we welcome you all. So, with all of that said, let me then begin with Everton Lucero from the Brazilian government.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you for your introductory remarks, and also to everyone that is here, who is here, because it's early in the morning, and it shows that the interest in this issue is great. First of all, I would like to say that to Brazil, the second IGF is being viewed as a successful event, and we are happy so far with the results, being today the last day and having gone through the previous days as you have all always followed. Our preliminary evaluation is that it indeed represents a step forward in fulfilling the mandate of the IGF. We see the IGF as an incremental process. It is a five-year-long period. Our intention from the beginning, as we said, was that Rio should be perceived as Athens plus. And from now on, our intention is that Delhi should be perceived as a Rio plus, and so on. But it's important to say that in our view, the IGF's mandate, being the careful, crafted result of a long deliberation session, negotiation period until Tunis, it is not subject to revision. That is, the mandate is something that we are not here to question. It is there, it's a given. Our role is to implement it. And we are not supposed to make any kind of restrictive interpretation of any of its terms. We need to understand it, to understand their meaning, and then to be prepared to go forward with it. Now, one comment that I think would be important for us to debate today is that at any multi-stakeholder process, there is the requirement of an anchor, a steady, reliable guarantor that the process will be observed and will be upheld. When there is a multi-stakeholder process at the national level, then it's easy because there is a constituted government, and the government normally issues a decree or any kind of legislative piece that will provide for the observance of that mandate for that particular issue that is considered, that is to be considered in a multi-stakeholder environment. That is what happened, what happens, for instance, in our own internet steering committee in Brazil. Now, at the international level, things are a little bit different because there is not a central government. There is not no such a kind of thing. So where is the IGF anchored? Well, in fact, the IGF is anchored at the United Nations, since it was the Secretary General that received the mandate to convene the forum. Now, on one hand, the United Nations Secretary General, when he sent his message that was delivered by Mr. Shah Tsukang earlier at the opening of this meeting, he recognized that the internet has become a backbone, the backbone of our globalized world. And for the United Nations, it has become a powerful tool in our mission to promote peace and security, development and human rights, particularly in the flows of information and knowledge that it enables. It means that there is a recognition of the internet as this such tremendous, powerful tool with applications to any other of these United Nations important missions in human rights, peace, security, development, and so on. But on the other hand, we do not see within the United Nations body a budget line to cover for the expenses of convening the IGF, of preparing for it, and so on. Not even the small and efficient secretariat that is run by Markus Kummer has any kind of financial support from the United Nations budget. It depends, as you know, on donations to a trust fund. And the secretariat has to engage periodically on fundraising activities. Okay, so far it's fine. It has worked very well. But if you allow me, as we are here just to discuss possibilities and discussing the mandate of the implementation of the mandate, let me just raise a theoretical possibility. Let me just consider that some of the donors to this trust fund may earmark their money so that their contribution would be made in case the IGF tends towards a certain path and not to the other, within the broad scope of the mandate, of course. This is theoretical, but it's perhaps a risk, a concrete risk, to the implementation of the mandate. So it is not quite understandable why, if the internet is perceived as such a powerful tool with many applications for the United Nations itself, its budget does not provide for the adequate support to prepare and convene this forum. I would have comments regarding which parts of the mandate are still short of full implementation. And I believe that I have a list here of six that I would like to mention. But I would not like to bother you going through with each of them. Perhaps I would take up one of them, and the others will perhaps come up when others speak. One of them was already mentioned by Bill in his opening remarks, when he talked about the promotion and assessment of on an ongoing basis, the embodiment of WISIS principles in internet governance process. And I fully agree with you, Bill. It, in my view, embodies a certain role of promotion and assessment. And if you want to do assessment, you need to have some certain structure to do it. But the one I would like to refer to is actually on paragraph 33 of the Tunis agenda, which says that the Internet Governance Forum, in its working and function, will be multilateral, multi-stakeholder, democratic, and transparent. And I don't think that this word transparent at the end was added just to be, just for the sake of having a fourth word and combining the sentence. It has to do with the preparations to the IGF. It has to be transparent. We have participated with a lot of interest in the preparatory process, in particular because we are today the hosts, and we also have the responsibility of chairing the IGF. There has been a great level of interest on behalf of our authorities, as you could see by the presence of four Brazilian ministers along this IGF. And I think it's important that we take that word into account when we go through the preparatory process. What I would like to suggest, and that's my last contribution, is that the procedures at the preparatory process, in particular for the advisory group, need to be reviewed. The advisory group works with no rules of procedure, no clear roles for the participants, and no transparency to the rest of the international community. We noticed that during the preparatory process, and we had only, in fact, one meeting of the advisory group in September, and at the end of that meeting, I submitted a paper, and I believe that it was not received as a positive initial contribution. In fact, what I was trying to do was just to raise some issues that we perceived that could be a contribution to the process. Except of one member of the advisory group, there were no comments on the substance of that paper, which made me think, and perhaps I could revise my thinking, but it made me think initially that my contribution was not accepted in good faith. And I think that one of the main aspects of the multi-stakeholder process is that we need to learn how to live with different views, different opinions, and different backgrounds. Of course, I am from the government, and governments are used to rules and procedures, but that's something that we need at least to talk about and not only avoid going into it or blocking any kind of procedure that could be even healthy for the process itself and for the IGF. Well, that paper is still on the table, and I hope that perhaps we would have an opportunity at this IGF or the next meetings or open consultations to come back to it and discuss. I will not also get into detail because I think I'm going out of my time now. And I'll be glad also to provide some suggestions on the improvements to streamline the work of the IGF for the next sessions if we have the chance later on the debate. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you very much, Everton, and you certainly will have that opportunity. And the last points you were making about the AG process, I think, pertain to the second part of our program, which is the sort of looking at the current state of play. So we'll come to that too. At this point, we are focusing on the mandate itself, and I appreciate your comments about that. We will next have Matthew Shears.
Thank you, Bill. I'll hold my comments on the advisory group and procedure and funding and issues till the next go-round. Let me take a slightly different tack. One of the reasons why we're sitting here, and it's a very good opportunity to review the mandate, and it's important for us to do so, because we're at the right time to do it now after two IGFs. But there is another way of looking at this. One of the challenges that we face at the IGF is that there are no success criteria established. And without success criteria, you cannot really evaluate how important this IGF is, and indeed what kind of lasting impact it's going to have. And that has some significant consequences, which means that it makes us fall back on the mandate and a kind of a check that box approach to the mandate to see if we've actually achieved anything and to what degree the IGF is a success. And I think we need to be careful about that. One of the things that we need to do going forward is to really understand what kind of an impact the IGF has had. And when you look at the mandate and you analyze the various elements of the mandate, it's important to understand whether or not those particular elements of the mandate have had an impact and have had an effect. This is not just a discussion for this particular session, it's a discussion for the taking stock session, and it's a discussion I believe that the Indians will have to take into account when considering how Delhi goes forward. How do you measure it? We've done no assessment of the participants in the IGF process as to whether or not it's met their needs. And I think this is something that does relate very much to the mandate when you look at the various components. There are some, I'm only going to dwell on a couple of key paragraphs here, but there are some key paragraphs as far as we're concerned. There's paragraph E, which talks about advising stakeholders in proposing ways and means to accelerate availability and affordability of the internet in the developing world. Now, we have partially addressed that, but it tends to be through the workshops and it tends to be through the main panel, but we don't see an agglomeration of the themes and the knowledge and the best practice. We need to see how that can be taken forward as a group of knowledge and distributed and made available at the local level and really put into practice. We need to see that is actually being implemented and undertaken. Another particular approach is a paragraph F. Strengthen and enhance the engagement of stakeholders in existing and or future internet governance mechanisms, particularly those from developing countries. This is an incredibly important point. A number of organizations, including the Internet Society, facilitate the participation of individuals from developing countries in processes such as the IETF through their fellowships. Other organizations in the internet community do the same thing. So we have to look at this and say, is it the responsibility of the IGF to do this, or is it the responsibility of the stakeholders themselves who are participating in the IGF to facilitate this? And this, again, is a matter of understanding roles and responsibilities, and I think it's something that we need to also discuss. And then there's H. Contribute to capacity building for internet governance in developing countries, drawing fully on local sources of knowledge and expertise. Again, we have a situation where what is the role of the IGF and what is the role of the stakeholders within the IGF process? We can discuss about participation, we just can discuss about skills development and capacity building, but again, how are we implementing that locally? Again, we as the Internet Society do a number of activities at the local level, including our INETs, where we engage in a discussion of internet governance issues, and the last one was on access, as do other internet community entities. So again, where is that balance, and how do we take the learnings from here and we apply them locally? These are some of the key points for us. There are other ones. I'm delighted to see that we've had a very robust discussion as it pertains to point J on critical internet resources. We've had workshops on IPv4v6, root server system, DNSSEC, ICANN processes, GTLDs, main session on critical internet resources. I think that we can say that we have had a good discussion about that particular paragraph. Now, of course, that's just one point. So I would argue that we have to look at the inter alia and suggest, well, what's the next issue that we need to consider? So again, you know, the beauty of the mandate, and this is where I might differ slightly with Everton, is that we can't interpret it too in a restrictive manner, but we can't interpret it in a too broader manner. We have to get the balance somewhere there and understand exactly what we're trying to achieve. But in order for us to understand what we're trying to achieve, we do need to have some kind of measure of what that is. And I believe that that's an important component, and that at this point in time is distinctly missing. I'll hold there, Bill, and I'll come back on the funding and advisory group later.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Matthew. Okay, so next we go to Aisha.
Thank you, Bill, and thank you for inviting me to be here to discuss these important issues with all of you. I'd like to build on what the first two speakers have talked about. We are here at the second IGF, so we're just at the end of the second, so we've had two experiences, and as Matthew said, it is a good time to review the mandate and think about what the experience of all the participants has been. At the same time, it is only the second one, so we have a certain limitation on what we have in terms of feedback from those who have really experienced this event. I think it's important to start by reminding ourselves that fulfilling this mandate will take all of us. It takes all stakeholders from all stakeholder groups, and it also takes people from around the world to fulfill it. I'd like to highlight a few areas of the mandate where the business community, which I've had the pleasure of helping to coordinate and manage over the past several years throughout the WSIS and the IGF events, where we see some of the strengths and where we see some of the benefits of the IGF. I'd like to pick up on what Everton mentioned about the importance of learning to live with different ideas. I think this is a very important strength of the IGF. It's a unique opportunity where many people from governments, business, civil society, academia, technical community, and business come together who would never see each other otherwise. They would never have the opportunity to interact, and that includes those stakeholder groups at the national level. Often there just isn't an opportunity for the kind of exchange that the IGF provides. And business people who are participating, and even those who are not here with us, really value this, and I think that it is a major part of what we're seeing is being fulfilled in terms of many of the paragraphs of the mandate. It is strengthening dialogue, it is bringing people together to exchange, it is enhancing their opportunity to understand better the different viewpoints and perspectives on these issues, and it is facilitating debate, which in turn allows different discussions that are going on in different organizations and forums to be better informed, and decisions that are being taken in other organizations to be better informed as well. In addition, I think it's important to highlight part of the Rio Plus. In Rio, we have some new formats in the schedule for the events, the open forums, the best practice forums, These are a complement to the workshops and the main sessions. And going forward, part of the review and thinking for planning in India could be to think about what we're trying to achieve for the participants in the IGF and how the format of the events will help facilitate that. The experimentation with new formats we have found this time around has been very helpful in terms of exchange of best practices, the sharing of different perspectives on how you address these issues, and allowing people to learn from each other. I would put the meeting place in that category as well. The informal interactions are part of what business has seen to be a real benefit of the IGF, and without getting into the nitty-gritty details of sub A, B, C, that is part of how the mandate is being fulfilled. I'd like to touch on a few areas that business has identified and that we believe we can keep working on to improve. Matthew touched on a few of them. Sub 72D, facilitating the exchange of information and best practices, et cetera. This is something that should be continued to be worked on in terms of both the format and the substance for the IGF going forward. In terms of subparagraph F, strengthening and enhancing the engagement of stakeholders. In this respect, one of the things that ICC Basis is trying to do is to strengthen the input and the engagement of businesses from around the world, both in between the events as well as being present physically at the events. As we've noted, there's a stronger business presence here than there was last year, and we work hard in between to raise awareness about the IGF, raise awareness about the opportunities, try to provide information to businesses who are not already engaged through the network of associations, and also by working with other stakeholders when we do events in different places around the world to make sure that we are contributing to what is so important about the IGF, which is the dialogue between the stakeholders that happens here. And then lastly, I'd like to highlight H. We place a lot of importance on building capacity for internet governance in developing countries. And some of the examples how we're trying to contribute to that, which also goes to Matthew's point about how we're doing this at the national level. How are we implementing and fulfilling the IGF mandate at the national, regional, and international levels? We've been trying through our network of the BASIS members to encourage dialogue at the national level, to raise awareness for businesses at the national level of why these issues are important and the different discussions that are going on substantive issues, and also the opportunity presented by the IGF, both in terms of the opportunity to interact with different stakeholders and exchange views, but also the range of internet governance discussion forums and processes that are going on. I think with that, I would like to conclude, Bill, and I'll pick up the other issues later on. Thanks.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Aisha. I appreciate those inputs. Okay, next we turn to Ambassador Nicholas Thorne from the United Kingdom.
Thanks, Bill. I'll try and abide by your two bites of the cherry approach and just restrict myself to some rather general observations at the moment. I'm here because my government takes seriously the process of a multi-stakeholder forum, which we helped to create in Tunis. I was intimately involved in that negotiation, which was very long and rather tortuous. I came here expecting a lot more negativity than I have found. In fact, I've been rather pleasantly surprised at the general atmosphere and the way in which all groups of stakeholders appear to be willing openly to share their views and their opinions. I think that the nature of the IGF helps that process. The fact that we are not looking to create a consensus written outcome, and we're not even necessarily working towards any particular objective or set of objectives, although Matthew, I do take your point that one needs targets. But I think it's the multi-stakeholder, relatively loose structure which is both important and, I think, in this second occasion, proving to be a success. I certainly think it's rather early to be judging the criteria too harshly. I was particularly struck by the open nature of the debate on critical internet resources, where there had been some concerns that this could end up being a very negative, essentially ICANN bashing event. And it wasn't. I enjoyed it. I learnt rather a lot sitting in the audience listening to that. Similarly, I learned from a number of the workshops that I've been able to visit here, particularly on IPv4 and 6. I think these are areas where there's a lot of misconception and a lot of good information sharing can take place. I'm a diplomat. I'm a career diplomat. And I've worked in the UN for many, many years. Can I counsel you to stay as far away from the intergovernmental process as you can? And I mean that really quite genuinely. I guess both as a British ambassador, but certainly as somebody who's struggled in those subterranean corridors. Your strength is the fact that you're a multi-stakeholder body. I'm part of it. Forgive me, yes, Bertrand, you're quite right. We need to be part of it. We need to continue it. The UN is not good at doing anything quickly, and it's not good at multi-stakeholder organizations. Final point, and I hope I'll get a second crack at this, but what I care about, what my government cares about too, but I care about particularly in this area, is the development access aspect, is the sharing of good practice, the identification of appropriate practice for problems of developing countries, and identifying ways, it seems to me, that we can actually increase the interest of business in the challenges of getting more internet access into the developing world. I'll shut up there, and I hope I get a chance to come back later on things like funding and structures. Thanks.
You certainly will, and thank you very much for your input. Okay, we turn next to Willie Curry from the Association for Progressive Communication. Willie.
Thanks, Bill. APC, as a civil society network, has put a lot of focus on the issue of access in the IGF, both in Athens and here in Rio. And this year we monitored all three workshops that were dealing with access to the internet in the developing world. And we're very happy to observe a high degree of convergence around what could be done. I think this is an unusual phenomenon in the sense that often there are very firm views one way or the other that might say, well, the private sector can do it all, or other views of saying, well, the private sector should be can't reach into areas where there's market failure, and other more collaborative approaches need to be undertaken. But I think what we've observed is that I wouldn't call it a consensus; I'd call it more of a convergence. And where there are differences, those differences tend to be differences of emphasis. So we would find in our workshop, for example, a speaker would say, look, mobile is very important for those at the bottom of the pyramid, and we should focus on that intensively, and that is a ramp into internet access in the medium term through the mobile internet. And then another speaker would say, well, hang on, it's all very well, but mobile networks tend to rely on microwave links. They're not putting down fiber. There are problems with the incumbent that has failed in its task to put down a fiber backbone network in the country. So we can't rely entirely on put all our eggs in the basket of mobile. We see it's important to get a backbone infrastructure into a country. Now that, to me, is not a major disagreement on the goal of achieving affordable internet access. It's more a matter of certain elements within a policy debate being emphasized. And I don't think that is a barrier to us going forward. And I think in a way we've approached the point, the mandate of 72E of the IGF, which Matthew's already alluded to, of advising all stakeholders in proposing ways and means to accelerate the availability and affordability of the internet in the developing world. We've reached a point perhaps where we could advise all stakeholders. What is missing in this equation is that we don't have really a formal mechanism of doing that. And I think this is an area on where it may well be possible to try and put our minds together and say, well, how could we actually do this without breaching the value of the IGF as a space for policy dialogue. So in a sense, we the mandate gives us two conflicting elements here. The value of a policy dialogue which does not produce a final communique, that does not produce turn the whole thing into an intergovernmental negotiating platform, which we don't want. Yet we see on a very important issue of internet access connecting the next billion a high degree of convergence, and I don't think the dynamic coalitions quite crack through that, because those are voluntary self-organized coalitions. They won't necessarily reflect a full multi-stakeholder perspective. So I think that going forward, we looking at India, we do need to apply our minds as to how we can build on something like a greater convergence of minds on improving internet access in the developing world. Thanks.
Thank you, Willie. And now our final speaker will be Parminder Singh.
Thank you, Bill. One is torn between trying to be very specific and really go by 72, A and C and stuff, and trying to, you know, be general and look at what was the visas process in Tunis agenda trying to do in, you know, higher level basis, and where are we vis-a-vis that? I have my own preferences among these numbers, and I can, you know, kind of quote some of them and said, look, this should be done. But I think whether the version on that is 5 years and 1 year, or 1 year and 5 years, what happens is don't do anything, have it. And we are stuck. We need to examine. We are stuck. The bill, I think, separated the issue of examining Tunis agenda and then about we are stuck and how to do something about it. But I think I have to go back and forth between the two. I'll examine certain structural issues. Why probably we probably what was it that Tunis agenda sought to do, and why we may not have made the kind of progress we would have liked to make on it. And before that, I would say that I have my preferences and some views about how specifically some things can be done better. There was an excellent paper by APC, which was contributed to the consultation process in May, which spoke of very good elements. I think one of the best one was that IGF should be reporting about what happened at any event on a format which has clearly each of these elements. And you have to tell against each element what happened. And that really makes you start thinking backwards and saying, okay, I'm going to report on that, so I'll have to start thinking what I'm going to put in those elements. Where did I analyze the VCS principles, and where did I advise stakeholders, in which ways was emerging issues identified, recommendations given, and how did I arrange a dialogue between different institutions? All those things come here. And there were other good suggestions. specific main sessions, talk about a dialogue between market and non-market approaches, and not about just access, which becomes too wide. Talk about network neutrality principle. We need to be able to decide on these kind of issues, and I'll come back to the structural problems within the present IGF where these decisions can't be reached, and then we are stuck with openness, access, diversity, and I forgot the other ones, which really doesn't matter because all of them look like one another when you hear people on the panels. And we need to be able to get into clearer specific issues. They also spoke about how there should be a lot of preparation going into those sessions, and there should be working groups devoted to that, and then there should be working groups looking at outcomes from those sessions. And this kind of, you know, more elaborate structuring, which would be adequate to the kind of purposes this IGF was set up for, is what we need to do. And I'll try to examine why we're not able to do that. And there's this paper by Everton, which he thinks didn't get a good reception. I think there are some elements about the structure, about representation of different stakeholders, how the accountability should be built, and how the process of appointment or selection should be stakeholder-based. And those things can increase the accountability and representativeness of different groups into the system. So, I mean, vaguely, these are the kind of points, I think, they're specific points which we can look at to go forward. But I, as a side, would like to see, if we want to analyze the Tunis agenda, I think before we analyze it point-wise, we need to see what was WSIS trying to do. In which context did we get into this discussion to give birth to this forum? The problem was obvious. The problem was that there was a need of global public policies in the internet space. Everybody knew that there is this need, and this need is going to become stronger and stronger, and we do not have any institution or an instrument to make those policies. So that was the need, and Matthew said about there's no success criteria. We have to look at success criteria going back to what we're trying to do. And yeah. So we have to go back to what we are trying to do, and that's our success criteria. Is the IGF contributing to global public policy making? Where have we reached? Are we even going in that direction of contribution? And second, procedural or process thing was that everybody knew that the present institutions are not adequate to the process of global public policy making in internet space. So multi-stakeholderism was one of the WSIS principles, and it's in Tunis agenda, and it's constitutive of the IGF. Because we knew that we need new structures to make global public policy. So these are the two criteria. Are we contributing to global public policy making? How far are we going in that direction? And the multi-stakeholderism. Now the problem often is that the second one gets discussed a lot, and I'm not against it, I'm just putting proportion back into where it is needed. We keep on speaking about ensuring that multi-stakeholderism is there, but often there are conflicts, and they have to be resolved. But we do not look at whether we are going forward in contributing to global public policy making. Is IGF doing anything about it or not? So these criteria have to be built in our assessment of the IGF. In this aspect of global public policy making, it sounds better. Well, it's only good enough for your voice. We are looking at the global space. The issue is the global public policy making, and often we do talk about taking best practices and going back to the national spaces, which is important, but are we contributing to global public policy making? And second is, what is the nature of public policies? Not a set of mere solutions which we can arrive at by a consensual process, which is a very good thing. But there are often areas of finding public interest which goes beyond multi-stakeholder trading of positions. It's something higher, a higher social consensus from moral persuasions and higher principles, constitutionality is found. So all these processes need certain structures which is important to look at. And we need to see whether it's a multi-stakeholder advisory group or any other structures, whether they are adequate to those purposes. About multi-stakeholderism, it's good that it deregulates participation. Everybody's welcome. But we also have to see the outcomes. And I think what I notice even when IGF is in Brazil, the people from certain parts of the world dominating the corridors and the spaces and the rooms, which is unlike what I see in the UN. So UN can be blamed for many other things, but we can't consider this as a small matter of detail which can be taken care of. It is a fact that UN is able to ensure better geographic representation than we are able to do at IGF. So we have to look at what kind of things can get that representation back into the process. So I think these, if we look at these kind of issues, whether people are represented, whether we are contributing to the public policy, then we can start analyzing the success or failure of the IGF. And one thing, I mean, if I'm speaking about certain kind of points more than others, this is the last point, Bill, it doesn't mean that I do not agree with what was brought out as the great sharing of experience, people learning, going back, changing their minds, finding new solutions. That's very important. But in any organization, if there are 8 points and we are doing well on 4, we tend to say, yes, that's what we meant to do. Very good, we are doing it. But then we mostly talk about the 4 which we aren't doing anything about, and we are concerned about it. And though I know it's a young or incipient organization in which we probably are going to speak more about what's being done already, but I think there should be a balance of what's not being done, and enough attention has to be done given to those points as well. Thank you, Bill.
Is mediating our communication very effectively here. Thank you to all the panelists for some very interesting ideas. I thought one of the key things I heard said was the point that Ambassador Thorne made about the critical internet resources discussion. It wasn't ICANN bashing, and it wasn't divisive. It was a useful airing of views. And Aisha also made the point that one of the real functions of the IGF is learning to live with different ideas. And I certainly think that that is indeed what IGF is all about. But then again, also Matthew expressed the view, the problem is there's no way to sort of agglomerate the themes that come out of the workshops and the other discussions to bring percolate them up into some kind of way where you can sort of have a focused conversation about them going forward. And that, I think, is one of the challenges. We have all this ferment, all these great ideas coming from all these bottom-up organized events, but then what do we do with them? How do we take them forward in some kind of focused way? That makes me wonder about Everton's point. I mean, when a representative of the host government says to me that 6 elements of the mandate are not being progressed, my first thought is how do we then have an open dialogue which is not conflictual, which is simply a rational sort of walking through and saying, well, what can we do about these more effectively? How can we bring forward ideas collectively as a group to think through ways we might go forward? I want to play a quick thought experiment because I have a particular interest in the WISIS principles. And in fact, I have a chapter in this book, which if people would like to have a free book, there's a big stack over here that many of us are in this book, edited by Wolfgang Kleinvector, in which I tried to put forward some ideas for implementing the WISIS principles and the role of the IGF. The WISIS principles, one would think, are fairly reflective of the kind of thinking that shaped the early discussions about the IGF, that it was going to have this cross-cutting ability to look at internet governance as a whole in a holistic manner, identify gaps, and so on. You take an issue like transparency, the transparency of internet governance mechanisms, or the extent to which they are inclusive in their decision-making. How could you use a body like the IGF to monitor the extent to which that is taking place in ways in which, and to make suggestions about how improvements might be made? Now, one possibility, of course, is to create a dynamic coalition, but then what can the dynamic coalition do? How do its ideas get taken forward? This goes back to Matthew's point. You can get a group of people together, they come up with some wonderful ideas about things that can be done to examine this question, but then how do you percolate it into the larger discussion in a way that's meaningful without having to formally adopt recommendations or any such thing like that? So my question is, how can we, whether the WISIS principles or other cases, development, another very important concern of mine, how can we identify means to take forward the ideas that are generated by the various sub-bodies into the broader dialogue more effectively than we do now? Because I think that that might help to make everybody feel like we are in fact progressing some of these points. Does anybody have any thoughts about that? Would anybody have any suggestions? Matthew.
Thanks, Bill. I'm happy to kick this one off. I think if we look at the model that the IGF is, it is about multi-stakeholderism. It's about stakeholders coming together, talking about what they do, learning from others, and taking that information back. And that's a very important point. It's not really for the IGF to actually start to compile themes and guidance and things like that. I mean, the Secretariat is considerably under-resourced at the moment. So to expect that would be perhaps unrealistic. It's really the responsibility of stakeholders. I mean, as Willie was saying, you know, the value of the access discussion this time needs to be captured. But who's going to take that value back to their countries? Who's going to take that value back to their communities? Who's going to take that value back so it can actually be implemented at a local level where much of it will be implemented, particularly in the access space? So really, at the end of the day, it's up to us as stakeholders what we glean from this process and then what we do with it. So that would be my suggestion.
That's a great point. Thank you. Both Aisha and then Everton.
Thank you, Bill. Just building on what Matthew has said, I think it's really important that we hear that the one of the principles of the WISIS is the multi-stakeholder interaction, and we want to see more of this at the national level, and that's one of the things that the IGF facilitates. So as Bill was pointing out, that the IGF contributes to policy discussions, this is one of the things that could be very interesting to hear more feedback on next time around. What improvements have been made in terms of multi-stakeholder discussions regarding public policy issues at the national level on these very important issues?
Bill, in trying to contribute in replying to your question, I think that some improvement is needed to streamline the work of the main sessions and workshops. And that could be done perhaps in the many ways, of course, but an idea would be, for instance, that the substantive and in-depth debate would be held at the workshops, like this one, and not at the main sessions. And the main sessions, instead of reproducing the same kind of panelists and discussants model, it should be prepared in a way that it would receive reports from the workshops, and then focus on discussing suggested actions, that is, what is the way forward, provided that the workshop discussed the issue. What can we do as the IGF at the main session to go forward with it? And what is the relevant international body that we need to call attention to the issue that was raised? So that is a debate that is more focused on results-oriented, without implying that we will be negotiating anything, but rather discussing with the view of identifying ways forward. The Secretariat could also continue to prepare a summary records of each of these main sessions, as it started doing here in Rio, and it has been quite a fruitful experience, I think. And the chairman should also continue to be allowed to present his or her conclusions regarding the debate that took place. And that particular piece of conclusion by the Secretariat and by the chairman, that could mean that we would have some more concrete outcome that could be then referred to by other organizations and bodies that are involved in that. Now, while I have the floor, I would just like to mention that we believe that the IGF is at the forefront of multilateralism within the United Nations. It may set precedents and contribute to review other instances of the United Nations, because this is a new, unique experiment, but provided that it is results-oriented that it is up to, it responds to the expectations of the international community on global public policy making. Because if at the end of this 5-year period we get to 2010 only with this kind of discussion and without any result and without any outcome that would really have any contribution to global public policy making, then perhaps people wouldn't bother to go to the 5th IGF and listen again to the same kind of ideas that have already been presented so many times. So this is our challenge, I think. How to structure this body in a way that, it, according to its mandate, it is able to indeed get to the expectations of the international community. We are not outside the United Nations. In fact, this, this room in which we are seated is United Nations territory today. So the IGF is integral part of the United Nations process. The United Nations adds legitimacy to the process. It provides the safe and reliable harbor to anchor the multi-stakeholder process, in which all stakeholders feel that there is this sense of commitment to the process based on what other organization in the world could provide such an assurance to all of us. So, and also it is extremely important that the United Nations is the only, perhaps, body that is able to ensure representation from different stakeholders. And this is one of the risks of the multi-stakeholder process as well, provided that if there is no adequate representation from the different stakeholders, the process may not be that representative and it may not come to the conclusions that that are of the expectation of the entire international community and not only one or other stakeholders. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to make sure I understand one point, because it sounds like you were saying something that I've been wondering about. So in the configuration you're suggesting, instead of having panels of experts painstakingly selected over a year-long period and notified 3 days prior to the event, the main sessions would instead be a platform wherein ideas, if there was a dynamic coalition on implementation of the WSIS principles, and it did some assessment of the extent to which various intergovernmental and private sector bodies were sufficiently inclusive, or I shouldn't put it that way, what the practices, best practices with regard to inclusion and transparency are in various bodies, and they came up with some ideas. They would then be able to bring that back to the main session and have that be subjected to a broader discussion with the larger community that's assembled. Some structure for percolating the ideas out of the workshops and dynamic coalitions into the main sessions as open discussion points. Is that what you were suggesting?
Yeah, taking into account the evolving nature of the IGF, I think we need to consider that. And okay. For instance, here we are discussing fulfilling the mandate of the IGF. Why would we have another session with different panelists at the Taking Stock and the Way Forward to discuss the fulfilling the mandate of the IGF? So we have had that discussion here. Now there, it is up for us to report and then for the main session to consider possible ways forward in a more broader audience and with all the translation to other United Nations language and more participation and so on. But without repeating the same kind of format, I think it's an important point that we should take into account.
Just to clarify your point. Okay. Time is rolling along because many people have ideas. All three of the people on the panel who haven't said anything probably would like to say something on this point. We also had it in mind to maybe do some forward-looking discussion and to open it to the audience, and we have 20 minutes. So what I'm going to ask is that the three remaining panelists make some brief observation on this particular point, and then I think perhaps we should go to the floor, if that's all right with everybody, because I do think there's probably people out there who want to say something. Willie?
Yes, Bill, I'll be very brief. I just want to say I think we can't go forward with the same format for the plenary sessions. The themes work very well at the workshop level, but I'd like to see us perhaps focus in on current debates that have or issues that have arisen in the year under which the IGF falls, and really work at putting together not this broadly representative, unwieldy panel, but a very focused and well-prepared discussion on a particular topic within, say, each theme. so that we can see a very sharp exchange of views on one or other issue that's current in that particular year.
Thanks. I'll be quick, and let me focus on what I thought the question was, which was, how do we take the product forward? Which I think was the Matthew's original question, and Bill, you took it up. I'm very good at negatives. I guess that's what I do for a living. What I think we must avoid is negotiated outcomes. If we go for negotiated outcomes, we will end up spending huge amounts of time on it, and we will always end up with the lowest common denominator. That's my firmly held view. I recognize the points about having a UN input. I think UN Lite, L-I-T-E, at the risk of sounding like a beer advert, is fine. I think anything more than we've got at the moment will lead to what those of us who know the UN already see happening. And I'm sorry if I offend any UN staff members in the room when I say that there are various different parts of the organization who are all making sure that they don't miss out on their piece of the internet. I think my main point would be that perhaps the way to take things forward would be to encourage the sort of structure which Willie was just mentioning, where you have panels on very specific items which are relevant today, and those in the issues we're addressing change very regularly, so I don't think there's a problem of the IGF remaining current, as it were, and topical, and then finding ways to take those back within the constructs of the stakeholders to their own national or regional groups. If you try and do this through governments, you will find that governments will spend the most part of their time defending the interests of their taxpayers. That's what governments do. And governments aren't terribly good at taking things forward in the way in which I think most people in this room would like to see happen. Thanks.
Yeah, I myself am very, I mean, keep thinking of these possibilities of doing intermediate things, assessing business principles, giving advice, and without going all the way to the recommendation giving thing. But I don't think how it's going to happen. And I think there are structural issues about how MAG sees itself. We know how they decided the panelists, and I know they are not going to be able to go beyond that at all. So unless we look at why they can't do it, I think giving recommendations that there should be a process whereby things can raise from among different things. So everything is an issue of exercising some kind of power, some kind of structure. And this is going to fail because MAG thinks that they are an advisory group. They would not exercise any kind of representative power. And they are not going to be able to even select what ambassadors is, narrow topics. All those things are going to fail unless we study structurally what makes MAG work the way it does now, and you know it, that they had a very difficult time selecting the panelists, and they couldn't do it almost till the last day. So we need to look at what's wrong in that structure and how they see themselves and what can be changed within the structure, so IGF, before we put our expectations from it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I'm sure there are many people who have some ideas in the audience. I'm not sure if we have a roaming microphone. Do we have a roaming microphone somewhere? Is there a microphone in the back for the audience? I tell you what, we can just, how about this? Maybe people could just, anybody who has a comment could just come to the center and line up, because, and I think because we only have a little more than 15 minutes, probably we should ask everybody to identify themselves and be as concise as possible. We'll take all the points as quickly as we can, and then we'll do a very quick response. So we'll start with Bertrand, and anybody else who is interested, please just line up, I guess.
Thanks, Bill. I'm Bertrand Lachapelle. I'm the French special envoy for the Information Society. Congratulations for the people on the panel and in the diversity of perspective. Very quick remarks. One, I was looking at the list in the mandate up there. I want just to suggest a mental experiment that we take with us. Think of all these paragraphs not as separate actions, but as items that we have to keep in mind every time we address a specific issue. On any issue, what about taking all the paragraphs and seeing what applies? Second thing is, regarding the relationship with the UN, I think it has to go both ways. Whatever support from the UN system is provided, and the territorial, the extraterritorial, financial support or whatever, is a very good thing. But it is under the condition that, on the other hand, the kind of influence that this process and those methods that we expect they have will percolate in the system. And to be very frank, the experience that I have on the CSTD for the follow-up of WSIS doesn't give me the impression that so far this is percolating enough. Last point, to the success factor notion that Matthew rightly said, people who know me know that I'm a process-oriented guy. One of the success factors that I see in the IGF, for me, is whether it develops working methods that allow to address the issues in an efficient and flexible manner. And I insist on efficient and flexible. Excessive rigidity will prevent it from being useful, and complete informality will make it useless. And in that respect, the articulation between plenaries or main sessions and the workshops is a very, very interesting avenue to explore. Thank you.
Thank you. And Juan Fernandez from Cuba. I think that I want to express the idea that I think that the IGF should have some sort of conclusions or documents or recommendations or whatever, either consensus base or either results from panel, because the idea that the members of the stakeholders, members that are here, are going to take it back to their countries, I think it fails when we take into consideration that the people that need most these results are not here. For instance, this instance of the IGF is being held in Latin America, and the number of representatives from Latin American countries is relatively very low. I could assume that next time on the other side of the world, it will be even lower. So I think that the IGF results should be compiled in some way. Maybe the suggestions of changing the way that the main sessions are in order to have some output, some something that could be sent even by other means, because remember that we're trying to connect the 5 billion that does not have internet, so they could not even read it in the internet. It has to go through other channels, and I think we have to keep that in mind in order to really have an impact in those that are looking toward the internet as a source or tool for development and for enrich their lives.
Thank you very much. My name is Wolfgang Benedek from University of Graz in Austria. We are following this process for quite some time, so a research project, but it's the first time I'm here personally. And I wanted to share with you only one or two impressions, and this is in particular related to inclusivity. I think the strength of the process is very much depending on the inclusivity. And when it says multi-stakeholder approach, that does not mean that all stakeholders are really there. And it seems to me that this is indeed not the case. I'm having the impression that in the UN system, it does not find proper attention. For example, we had several workshops dealing with human rights issues, but I never came across the High Commissioner for Human Rights of the United Nations here. The Council of Europe made very much use of this opportunity to show the activities, but I didn't see any representative of the African Union or of the Organization of American States and so on. When I looked at the plenary panels, I was surprised that the relationship between men and women was maybe 10 to 1. When I looked at the panels, I had the feeling that the South was not really well represented. And I can understand that multi-stakeholder means that those who have interests, they would like to show themselves. But I think it would be important to give more space also to those who are still underrepresented and to encourage those who would be important to carry the process on in other fora, in other regions and so on, to be here and to participate as well. Thank you very much.
Okay, Vittorio Bertola speaking personally as one of the people who actually came up with the idea of the forum. First one is a disappointment. My disappointment is that, at least from the outside, you perceive that many people in the organizing groups and MAG and so are there more to do damage control than to make the forum succeed. At least this is the perception. And for people who commit and come here and try to convince other people to come and participate, this is not a a good feeling. I think that there might be problem issues, fears, but we need to discuss them, overcome them, and come to a point in which all the people who have the responsibility to organize this conference are committed to the full success of this conference. Otherwise, it will not go anywhere. And the other point I'd like to make is that this forum still lacks a reason to be, a long-term mission. And this is partly what we are trying to do with the idea of an Internet Bill of Rights, but there are several other issues that could constitute a long-term project. It lacks the ability to make an impact, but I think this is not because it lacks negotiated recommendations or outcomes or whatever. If you want outcome, just make a meeting and write down a document and present it. It will not be the outcome of the forum. Still, it will on the internet, things are binding because people subscribe to them. They are not binding because there is someone imposing that. And that is true of the standards, that is true of everything. So the only, if you want something to come out of the forum, just do it. There's no one stopping you. So. And please don't get everyone stopped in this long-term discussion on negotiating and stuff. That's not necessary. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Hal Kalwasser. I'm the chair of the USITU Association in Washington. The point I wanted to make was that I think we've forgotten the context in which this occurs. There is internet governance. It's dispersed. It's in multiple places. There are different constituencies that appear in each of those governance forums. The people who go to IETF are different from the people who go to ICANN are different from the people who go to ITU, although there are some commonalities. The logic of IGF is that it is an opportunity for all of those people to get together and to share common issues where they don't normally have a chance to interact because the space in which they discuss them is distinct and separate. And so I think when people have said, there are a couple of panelists said, we'll take them back to our home countries and discuss them. Wrong. You'll take them back to ICANN, you'll take them back to IETF, you'll take them back to the ITU, you'll take them back to ISOC, wherever, and that's where you'll discuss them. If there is perhaps a deficiency in this process, I don't think it is in the lack of outcomes per se. I think it is that most of the workshops and the perhaps the general panels, but certainly the workshops, discuss good ideas, but then fall very far short of saying, here's where we need to address them and how we need to address them. Because this is a matter of cross-fertilization to expand the horizons of those who participate in the current mechanisms of internet governance. So that's my concrete suggestion, but it's also my attempt to temper this discussion by remembering the context in which all of this arises as a way to cross-fertilize all of what goes on elsewhere. Thanks.
Jeremy Malcolm's my name, and I'd just like to disagree with one point made by the last speaker in the sense that I don't consider that the ITU and ISOC and so on cover the field in terms of global public policy for the internet. As Palmenda said, the point of WSIS was that there is no existing organisation that covers the field of global internet public policy. And I'd also take issue, Bill, when you said that how can we filter the outputs of the grassroots organised events without having to make recommendations. In black and white up there, we have as one of the elements of the IGF's mandate to make recommendations where appropriate. And I think without the capacity to do that, the IGF's going to be hampered in participating in global public policy development. So it is, having said that, true that the IGF can't make recommendations at the moment, but that's because of the choices that have been made in the way that it's been structured. And those choices have largely been made by default without really considering or openly discussing the alternatives. So to turn this situation around, as I see it, we need to reform the IGF, and that needs to be done at three levels, the plenary body level, the executive level, and the working group level. At the plenary body level, the structuring of the meeting as a conference to which high-level speakers present pre-prepared papers to a largely passive audience hasn't been and increasingly won't be successful or useful as an approach. It doesn't really encourage all participants to engage with each other and to deliberate upon each other's diverse views with the aim of working towards consensus. And I think that an approach based around facilitated discussion in small table groups would be one way of doing that. And in fact, the speed dialogues that had been planned for the Rio meeting originally would have been a good start in reforming the plenary body along those lines. Secondly, at the executive level, the advisory group as it presently exists isn't, it doesn't have either the capacity or the legitimacy to undertake all of the functions that are required of a peak body of the IGF that's to make recommendations. For example, someone needs to assess whether the plenary body has reached a consensus view, and if so, to reduce that consensus view to the form of a recommendation, which can then be passed on to other bodies if there are appropriate other bodies for it to be passed on to. And that should be a multi-stakeholder body that does that, and the only legitimate way for such a multi-stakeholder body to be appointed is by the stakeholders themselves. So reform of the advisory group is definitely needed, and perhaps as reformed, it perhaps shouldn't be called the advisory group anymore, because it's not just to advise the Secretary General, it has a legitimacy to act in its own right. And briefly, third, at the working group level, the IGF doesn't have working groups, but the dynamic coalitions could fulfil that role by providing input to the plenary body for it to approve, which could then be formalised as a recommendation at the executive level. Currently, however, there's no process by which for the dynamic coalitions to do that. And neither should there be at the moment, because the dynamic coalitions don't have to satisfy any criteria of multi-stakeholder composition or democratic operation. So they also need to be reformed, to be greater, more institutionalised, so that they can act as multi-stakeholder working groups at the IGF and can deliver recommendations for input to the plenary body. I'll wrap it up there. Thank you.
I will use only the double of the time that the previous speaker. thank you. I really expected more discussion about the title of the workshop, what means about how the IGF is fulfilling or not the mandate. As I think that there have not been enough discussion about all the I think that there are 12 points. 12 items that are in the Tunis agenda as the mandate of the IGF, and I think that one thing is to discuss if the IGF is fulfilling or not the mandate, and the other is discuss about the improvements that the IGF could get. So, I'm not saying, of course, that the IGF could not be improved. Everything can be improved, and of course, the IGF after only two meetings. And after this short life, it's obvious that can be improved, and can be improved very much. But regarding the mandate itself, I think that the IGF is largely fulfilling the mandate. And in fact, I think that of 12 of the points, I think that there are no too much disagreement about 10 of them, but this is a large number. I have seen, or I have heard only some discussions concentrated in what does probably advise all stakeholders mean, or what does make recommendations mean, or probably help to find solutions. But while we can continue discussing that, it is important to remark that the IGF is in a good way, probably. Is fulfilling the mandate also better than it could have been expected when the creation of the IGF. The I would like to remark the comments that were done by one of the speakers that regarding the importance of avoiding negotiated outcomes. And it is important to say that I will not add very much, but any negotiated outcome it's good imply to implement processes for negotiating that so just would make us to concentrate in the negotiation instead of the discussion of the most important points. The last point is regarding fundraising. So one of it was addressed one comment, one concern about the fundraising. I would like to comment that we just had this morning a meeting of donors of ICF. As one of the expectations of the donors is to increase the number of donors and the diversity of the donors. And so, if the donors represent the whole range of views regarding ICF, so there will be an equilibrium. So what we can do is invite more people of the most diverse views to support ICF and contribute if they participate in as a donors of the process.
I'll be concise. Slavka Antonova, Massey University, New Zealand. I have just a few points to mention here. Let's keep in mind the long-term effect of the multi-stakeholder process. And I agree with some of the panelists that actually people will take from here a lot, and they'll bring it to their communities, local communities there. People learn to speak a common language here with the government and the business, etc. So my suggestion would be, why don't we make more use of the online communication between the annual sessions there and continue discussing the same important issues? And actually, if we produce, as you suggested, the Brazilian representative suggested, produce some kind of consensus or points of consensus, then continue discussing them during the year. Second question to the panel here. What happened with the internet governance definition? Do we have to specify it, what exactly we understand today under global internet governance or not? Are we very clear on this? So that's my point. Thank you.
My observation is too early to decide, at least decisively, about we are fulfilling or not. We are halfway through and half frustrated and half satisfied. And on some stance, I think we've made several good progress on the security areas or the IPv4v6 you noted and other areas, emerging areas. On process, the late appointment of MAC made it so difficult and with the room to be improved. Finally, for the output, we don't need a negotiated output perhaps, but we need some collaborative output on some more informal basis. Rapporteurs or other mechanisms might be very good to see. Thank you.
Yes, so in fact, this mandate, it's the compromise between two different opinions we are in during the WSIS at the Tunis. On one part, there was one constituency want to have this forum just to have discussion, and one part was more, in fact, more formatted output. It turned out, and it is very disappointing, that in fact all the parties should be in good faith. This has been negotiated and should be implemented. And my friend and me, in fact, we are deeply regretting that one party is not in good faith. There is things this is not to be negotiated. It is. What is to be negotiated in the fact how this is interpreted? And one missing part, which is in fact also in the WSIS text, is how to implement this. And there is paragraph 78. There is a chicken and egg problems. We don't have a bureau as mandated in the WSIS, so we cannot make the procedure. And then since we cannot make the procedure, then we cannot implement it. So I think it is the big part. I think all constituency must be in good faith. This has been negotiated. This must be implemented. Now, if they want to review and to say, well, we don't want to do this and this, I not can clarify they are good faith participant of this forum. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for that. All right, so let's very quickly try to get some, Willie, you'll pass. Matthew, a few integrative thoughts?
Yes, just quickly. I think it is very important that we learn from this process and that we do take back with us the learnings that we get as a community, as our individual stakeholders from the various sessions that we engage in. trying to come to some results, and I put results in quotes because it means many different things to many different people, it's going to be very difficult. It's what we as stakeholders take away, and that's the most important thing, the most valuable thing, and the thing that we should focus on. And one other thing on the advisory group. I'm a member of the advisory group. The advisory group will change. Part of the mandate from the UN Secretary General is that we come up with a new process, so that will change. But it is representative, but it's collegial. It's bottom up. We're there as individuals, not as organizations, and that needs to be borne in mind. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.
Very quickly, two points. I think that we should look at the fact that there are many collective results. In all the different rooms at this IGF in Rio, there have been many results in the sense that people have heard recommendations, best practices, guidance, and that is a result. I would put it in the plural and not look for negotiated outcome documents, which also we should look at in the context of time and effective use of it and the effective use of human resources as well.
Very briefly then, if there are 12 points that is written in paragraph 72 and there are in fact 11 paragraphs from 72 to 82 at Tunis agenda that is the mandate of the IGF, if let's say 10 out of these 12 points are implemented, it doesn't mean we fulfill the mandate, because the mandate has to be fulfilled in its entirety and not selectively. I think that a good way to, I just would like to recall that a good way to perhaps improve the way the main sessions are conducted is to ask the main sessions after receiving reports from workshops where and how we should address these issues. That's one suggestion that came up to the from the floor, and I think it's a very good one. Thanks.
Three quick points, if I may. One, lots of ideas have come out of this IGF session. It is up to the individuals, the multi-stakeholder individuals, to take those home and to transmit them to whichever constituency they represent. Number one. Number two, I think the IGF is working. I think it's working, so much so that we in the UK anyway, led by our parliamentarians, will be creating a similar organisation nationally. We'll see how it works and we'll report back on that. It's a bit of an experiment. Final point, I wonder what percentage of time in this conglomeration of meetings has been, I would suggest, not used terribly positively by discussing process rather than the ideas which I had thought we were here to share. Thanks.
2 points, very related ones. I think rather than going by the points, and Everton also said there are 12 points and two maybe, I mean, not being fulfilled, and even that's important. I would not even go by a number of points, but I think we can divide into two broad areas. There are a lot of things like bottom-up processes, people taking back lessons to their countries, people learning from each other. There's one set of things, and they are doing well on it. Let's give a very good score on that. But when we are discussing the other set, it's not right to bring this set of things being fulfilled, and therefore probably we can do without the other set. And the other set, I said, was about how well are we faring on getting something going in terms of the global public policy on internet. Is anything working there? Are we making any progress at all? And I don't think one set of things which are happening, which we have just spoke about, can be cited in place of the other, and we should keep these discussions separate. And again, when these kind of issues arise, I think is a good way to see is working for whom. And if you see it, there are some people who are happier with these kind of things and the other people who want public policy. I know the marginalized people, the people who are outside the dominant paradigm, they want more about, I mean, poorer people always wanted policy and richer people wanted markets and bottom-up processes and self-governed processes. So we need to see for whom is it working. And if IGF has an overarching theme of development, you need to ask the developing countries, and if you don't trust the governments, you ask the developing NGOs, gather them together and ask them what do they want, and they'll tell you they want this. And that is the important point. And again, say doesn't mean that you only do that, but at least keep it in mind as a proportionate thing that IGF needs to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you all. It's clear that we've only scratched the surface and there's much more that could be said here. Perhaps we'll have this conversation again in another context going forward. But I appreciate the inputs of everybody in the audience who spoke up, and everybody on the panel for doing their best to keep the time. We're a little bit over. So I thank you all for coming. There is a session, a main session later on taking stock, where I imagine some elements of these conversations will continue. So thank you, and by the way, if and if you like, take a book, because otherwise the Germans have to carry them back to Germany.
Nice meeting you, Ambassador. Very good to meet you.